Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today is the 12th anniversary of 9/11, and I've been busy working on the conference taking place this weekend in Washington, D.C. The website is 911dcconference.org, and hopefully it'll be streaming live this weekend. There are also other activities going on around the world by people seeking the truth. There's a Million American March Against Fear in Washington, D.C. today. There are activities in New York City supporting the Architects and Engineers campaign called Rethink911.org. They've taken out ads in 12 cities around the world on buses and billboards, etc., to bring people's attention to 9/11 truth. And locally, we'll be showing the provocative documentary 9/11 Explosive Evidence Experts Speak Out, which was produced by the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Their numbers are soaring, and they now have 2,021 architects and engineers calling for a new investigation into the collapses of the World Trade Center buildings. Come see their movie tonight at the University of Hartford in the Auerbach Auditorium in Hillier Hall at 7 p.m. It's free, and a lively discussion will follow the film. Parking is in Lot B. There's another 9/11 war raging in Syria. And as you know, our president and secretary of state want to bomb Syria immediately. I've invited Dr. Paul Craig Roberts on the show today to discuss the Syrian situation. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy and Associate Editor of the Wall Street Journal. He was a columnist for Scripps Howard News Service and Creators Syndicate. He has had many university appointments. His internet columns have attracted a worldwide following. His latest book, The Failure of Laissez-Faire Capitalism and Economic Dissolution of the West, is now available. Paul Craig Roberts, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Recently, you wrote an article about the high cost of saving face for Obama. And I'm just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about why he's trying to save face. Who's pushing him?
Well, he's pushing the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is that this time the weapons of mass destruction lie didn't work, and the world didn't go along. The UN wouldn't go along, not even NATO would go along. The British Parliament voted it down. So Obama had been pushed way out on the limb by the neoconservatives, by the Israel lobby, or the Israel government, and it's embarrassing. You know, what is he do? Does he crawl back along the limb and come down, or does he try to save face? And so what the argument is now is, okay, Congress, you've got to save the president's face, or the prestige and credibility of the United States will be lost. How can we make threats and declare an attack and then not be able to deliver? And it's become clear that I can't act without any support. And although I fully intended to ignore everybody in the Congress and had asserted my ability to do what I want with or without Congress's support, I was counting on the British and the French and other people to provide cover, and they refused. So now you've got to provide the cover. That's the argument.
Yeah.
Cheryl, it no longer has anything to do with Syria or chemical weapons.
Right, I understand that. What is behind the attack on Syria? Why Syria? What's the real reason?
I think there are a variety of reasons. The main one is the neoconservative ideology of American world hegemony. You know, in that document, the Project for a New American Century, the neoconservatives all signed off on, I think it was back toward the end of the 1990s. It called for overthrowing a long list of countries, and Syria is one of them, Iran is one of them, and even Saudi Arabia is on the list. And what this ideology, this neoconservative ideology, it's a repeat of the French Jacobins of 1789, the French Revolution, They declared this was a new beginning and that France was taking it to every country in Europe. And what the neoconservative argument is that, well, the collapse of communism and socialism proves there's no alternative to American democratic capitalism, is what they call it. Of course, it's not democratic and it's not capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
But that it has now been chosen by history as the social system for mankind, and the Americans have the right and responsibility to impose it on the world. So that is the basic thing. Now, of course, when you're attacking Middle Eastern countries, you're also serving Israel's interests. You're removing obstacles to their ambitions. You may be serving the interest of oil companies, pipeline companies, and war always serves the interests of the military security complex. So all those interests support this ideology because it advances their own interest.
Right. Now, many of the neoconservatives had connections to Israel, correct?
Oh, yes. They all have very close connections. They're tightly tied. And apparently, many of them are dual Israeli-American citizens.
Now, with the Obama administration, I think many people thought we got rid of the neoconservatives. So how are they still influencing the Obama administration?
Well, we're not rid of them. Look who's his national security advisor. It's Susan Rice. I mean, she's one of the main ones. So you're not rid of them. And moreover, under the Bush and Cheney regime, they set the course. And Obama has faithfully followed it. In fact, it really started with Clinton and the attacks on Yugoslavia and Serbia by the United States forces. And the neoconservatives, they tried to start during the Reagan years. You know, they got in office because no one understood them. They hadn't made the policy declarations that came later. You know, in the 80s, they hadn't written the project for the new American century. The Soviet Union hadn't collapsed. And so they hadn't come up with this kind of a ideology. But they were determined that the United States prevail over the Soviet Union, and they were prepared to drive the world to nuclear war. Reagan kept saying he wanted to end the Cold War, and they kept saying, no, we have to win. We have to win it, not end it. But they caused a big mess. You may remember they were running drugs in order to finance the Contras in Nicaragua. They had the Iran-Contra scandal. It all blew up, and Reagan fired them all. And several of them were actually prosecuted and sentenced, including Elliot Abrams. He was an assistant secretary of state and was sentenced. I think he was pardoned by Reagan's successor, George Herbert Walker Bush. So that blew up, but they made a comeback with Bush and Cheney and actually dominated the Bush administration. Practically every post in the Pentagon and State Department and National Security Council was filled by neoconservatives.
Now, in Syria, who are the rebels, this al-Nusra, et cetera? Who are they? Who's backing them?
Well, they're not rebels. They are outside forces sent in by Washington's support, the Saudis' support, and the oil emirates. They're armed and supplied with money in that way. They are terrorists, jihadists. They're the same people that the CIA used against Gaddafi in Libya. And they are trying to overthrow Assad because he is a secular leader, and they want an Islamist leader. So they don't agree with secular Muslim politics. They want Islamic states. So that's their motivation, and it's part of the neocon strategy to overthrow these countries. Now, originally, Washington had in mind sticking in power a puppet that would then do Washington's bidding. But they found they can't do this because the Islamists are too strong and they can't find a puppet that can survive them. In fact, they destroyed Saddam Hussein, who was the only secular guy who could keep the lid on the Islamists, and Gaddafi, who could also do that. So Syria is the last place where there's a secular leader. So what the plan now is simply to destabilize these countries permanently, so that the internal divisions are leashed upon one another and they keep killing each other forever, and it essentially removes any organized government. So there's actually no government that can act against Israel or against American interest. And the hope is that this radicalization of the Muslim world will spread into Russia and China. See, Russia had a large Muslim population, borders many Muslim states. China also borders Muslim states, has a Muslim population. And, of course, Russia and China are the two main obstacles to American hegemony. There's no prospect of the United States invading Russia or China. And they don't want to have a nuclear war because nobody wins that. So the plan is that all of this destabilization will spread into these countries. And then once they're faced with it and are having to use harsh measures, then Washington can use all the non-governmental organizations that it supports in Russia and China to bring charges against them, like, you know, happens in Syria, happens in Iran. And the combination of these internal charges from the American-financed NGOs, they're essentially fifth columns in these countries, and the conflict that the Muslims bring destabilizes the countries, makes them essentially politically impotent, and they have to make some accommodation with the United States calling the shots. So that's what the plan is now. That's the whole plan. They've given up on puppet governments. They realize they can't do that. And so now it's just to use constant chaos and strife. You know, I don't know how well it's reported in the Western press, but the level of violence and death in Iraq right now is just as high as during the peak of the American occupation. I mean, every day, just huge numbers of people are killed in Iraq. So the violence the United States took to that country continues after its departure. And the same in Libya. There's essentially no government in Libya. Warring groups fighting for power and whatever their view of Islam is against one another. And so these countries essentially don't any longer exist as political entities.
Yeah, they've accomplished their mission in these countries then.
That was their redefined mission because they found out that's what was happening.
Yeah, and speaking of the media not covering a lot of this, in this article you wrote, you talked about NPR is no longer an alternative voice. Can you talk about how NPR is repeating the Obama's lies about Syria?
Well, what really provoked that was, I think, 2 days ago, they had on the head of one of the main neoconservative institutes, and they gave this guy a forum to tell all the lies and to make the Obama attack on Syria look like the greatest act of moral behavior in human history. You know, morality requires us to. And then they followed that with reports that Democratic and Republican leaders in the House and Senate had endorsed the need to hold Syria to account for using chemical weapons. And NPR never said, where's the evidence? Why does nobody believe you? Why do the American people don't believe you? The British Parliament doesn't believe you. NATO doesn't believe you. Why are you telling us this stuff that nobody believes? Nobody. I mean, that's what a journalist would do. I mean, just imagine if Helen Thomas had been there. But they don't ask the obvious questions. They just provide a forum for lies and let them stand. Nobody says, hey, what about this? And there was no challenging voice. There was no voice for peace. There was no voice asking for any kind of confirmation. So I think NPR is no longer an alternative voice. Actually, it was the Bush administration that destroyed the National Public Radio. And it can't recover. And so in terms of the official media, there's no truth whatsoever about this.
So where can someone go to get good information if, you know, we can't trust obviously all the corporate media or NPR? Where can people go?
Well, you have to go online. I think one of the best places is Russia Today, RT.
Yeah.
They have an English page and broadcast. And then, of course, there are a lot of websites. You know, I write about it. Antiwar.com has lots of reports. Information Clearinghouse has reports. Sometimes Counterpunch has reports. Op-Ed News. There are a lot of online sites where you can get independent thinkers. I mean, we're talking about experts, you know, former high CIA officials and everything. And you can also get the foreign press take. Now, when you have the president of Russia, who's essentially a low-key person, he's not confrontational. And yesterday, he says in a press conference that John Kerry is a liar. This, if this is the way the Secretary of State is seen by the world, what good does it do to the United States? I mean, Obama and Kerry and the neoconservatives, Susan Rice and the two warmongers, McCain and Lindsey Graham, they're destroying the reputation of the United States. They're destroying the credibility, and they are exposing that American democracy is a hoax because nobody in the country, I mean, this the latest poll shows that 36% of the population might support a strike on Syria. Well, this has to be the 36% that are on the left end of the bell curve. They got to be the dumbest people in the country. If you're going to go create a war crime because 36% of the most stupid people in the country supports it, I mean, the credibility of the United States is just essentially destroyed. And so is this pretense as a democracy. They're not listening to the people. You know, it's like Senator Rand Paul said just the other day. He said, he asked Kerry in the hearing, he says, nobody outside of Washington believes in this. He says, not one of my constituents has come to me and said, we have to strike Syria.
And even if Congress votes for this, which, you know, they could be pressured to do this because they're not very strong backbones in a lot of them, but is it a war crime?
Yes. It's a war crime, regardless of whether Congress supports it. What Obama realized was he couldn't act without any kind of support, and he's hoping that if Congress will support it, he can get NATO to do it and hide behind that as well. But as the Secretary General of the UN made quite clear just the other day, and as Putin has made clear, military aggression, unprovoked military aggression, is a war crime under international law. It's unambiguous. So regardless of whether Assad used chemical weapons, he has not attacked the United States. He has not threatened to attack the United States. And therefore, under the Nuremberg Standard that the United States established, for Washington to attack Syria is definitely a war crime. The only way they can get around this is if the UN endorses the use of force against Syria. That is the only way that an attack on Syria is not a war crime.
So the fact of the sarin gas, let's talk about that for a minute. In my sources, I've read that it looks like it could have come from Saudi Arabia and be given to the quote, rebels, the al-Nusra, and it says they mishandled it. But there's no proof that it has come from the government of Syria. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, well, there's no proof that it came from the Syrian government, and Putin has made it clear that it obviously didn't, because the Syrian government is winning the war and would certainly not use something that would give the Americans an excuse to come in to rescue the Islamist terrorists that they sent into Syria. But the international press is full of reports. There are reports in Turkish newspapers. In fact, Turkish police apprehended al-Nusra terrorist with sarin gas in Turkey. So it's known that they have it. They were caught in Turkey with it. There's been a report from a journalist that has reported for all sorts of mainstream news organizations that they have interviewed the al-Nusra people in Syria who told them, and they named their names and direct quotes, that they were given the gas by Saudi Arabia, but were not told proper handling instructions and didn't know exactly what they were doing, and it was mishandled and accidentally set off and killed a lot of their own people. So this is in the press. So I think the evidence is overwhelming that the sarin gas, if that's what this was in this case, is already in the hands of the so-called rebels, and that Assad most certainly would not have used it. He's winning, and he wouldn't have done anything that would let the Americans come in and alter the balance of power there.
In your article, you said instead of voting on whether to allow Obama to attack Syria, Congress should be voting to impeach Obama and Kerry. Can you talk about that?
Well, look, of course, there are huge numbers of reasons to impeach him. He has violated the Constitution ever since he took office. He's created a police state. He lies through his teeth. The officials in his government lie through the teeth on every subject, not just Syria. You know, James Clapper lied to Congress. Oh, we're not spying on anybody. And he's still in office. And now we have the President of the United States lying through his teeth about, we have conclusive evidence, but they don't release it. If they had conclusive evidence, they would have given it to Cameron so he could have carried the vote in Parliament. And Cameron had to say, well, there's not any evidence, it's just my gut feeling. So they're lying. The whole world knows it. They don't have any evidence. They don't release it. And they are trying to commit another war crime. That's not only an impeachable offense, that's an offense for being put on trial at The Hague.
Right.
So why do we tolerate this kind of criminal in office? He's a criminal.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. So if Congress, and they could, you know, they haven't been very strong. They have tended to give these presidents anything they want. So if they vote for this attack on Syria to prevent them from doing that, what can the American people do? It seems like we don't have anyone there representing us. So what's left for us?
Well, that's the question. That's what I say. It shows there's no democracy here.
Yeah.
And, of course, American democracy, this is their excuse. Oh, we're the exceptional people. We are indispensable. We're bringing democracy to the world. How can you bring democracy to the world and not any in your own country?
Right.
So I think that what they're doing is isolating the United States diplomatically. Now, they can overcome that to some extent simply by giving bagfuls of money to foreign leaders. You know, they'll just say, well, look, wouldn't you like to have $50 million in a Swiss bank? And the guy thinks about that and says, well, that's probably better than being an enemy of the United States, and takes $50 million. So there's no limit how much money they can spend to bribe people. And this is essentially the way Washington works. So they may be able to create the appearance that they have support because they bought it on the table. But nevertheless, that then just spreads the discrediting of democracy because the people in England and Germany and France and everywhere else are against this too. And so if their leaders are then bought to support something that no Western people support, then the whole concept of Western democracy is thrown out the window.
Yeah.
Wherever you look, the people have no say. So I think it'll be part of the downfall of the West and their replacement by the rise in the East.
So for the American people, what's left for us to do if we want to try and stop this war? I know it's a tough question, but do you have any thoughts on that? We can call our congressmen and let them know we don't like it, but, you know, often they don't listen to us, as we've seen in the past. So.
Yeah, they don't listen. And by the time an election comes up, there'll be other issues. People will have forgotten. They won't even know how the guy voted. So I think that the people have lost control, and fear was used, terrorist fear. All the terrorists are going to get us. We have to have a police state. It's very difficult for people to do anything when their every word is spied on and recorded, and I don't think that people can do much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could take to the streets in vast numbers. That probably isn't going to happen, and they could also just be demoralized. So I think what we're really witnessing is just the demise of the entire West. It's lost its credibility. It has no further claim to any moral authority. The only thing exceptional about the United States is it's worse than Nazi Germany, the greater threat to the world. It's pushing the world toward nuclear war because Russia and China understand now that nothing the United States government says is true or could be trusted, and that they are the ultimate targets. So they're not fooled.
So if we do carry out this attack on Syria, what do you think that would do to the world?
Well, I think it'll isolate us. I think that Putin and others will keep making the point that this was a war crime. It did not have UN authorization. And under international law, it's clear. Cannot attack people. In other words, it'll also make clear that all our other attacks were war crimes. NATO's attack on Libya was a war crime. The American attack on Afghanistan, on Iraq. The ongoing drone attacks on Pakistan, on Yemen, Somalia, these are war crimes. And now that if the cover is blown off of it and they can't hide behind some kind of UN resolution that they stretch beyond what it meant or hide behind NATO or hide behind something, it becomes stark that this is just the arbitrary exercise of violence that is identical to what Hitler's blamed for. And so I think it will isolate the United States. The Western world goes along with it. It'll isolate them. And these are declining countries. Their economic power is declining. There's no jobs. There's no employment. There's no income growth.
Do you have any indication that Russia or China or other countries would get involved in the actual violence?
I don't think that Russia and China will go to war over Syria. But they know that once Syria falls, the next target is Iran. And Iran is Russia's underbelly, and it's 20% of China's oil supply. So when it comes to Iran, China and Russia will be firmer. They'll draw firmer lines. They'll make firmer statements. And both are already beefing up their strategic nuclear forces. So the chance for world peace that the collapse of the Soviet Union brought and the agreements between Gorbachev and Reagan, this has all been squandered by subsequent American administrations. The criminal Clinton, the criminal Bush, the criminal Obama, they have now renewed the specter of nuclear war by pushing a diplomacy of violence, of illegal violence, pushing this notion that America has the right to prevail over the world. So I think that has to push the whole world toward nuclear confrontation, because I don't think China and Russia are just really going to submit. They're not going to say, okay, we give up. I don't think they will. So it's dangerous what Obama is doing. Now, it could lead to a wider war just because as things develop. I mean, what if one of the Russian ships in the Mediterranean is hit by one of these cruise missiles that the United States is going to launch? Or what if the insane Israelis decide to expand the conflict and some missile hits a Russian ship? I mean, you can't tell what's going to happen. Or what if Syria is actually better armed than anybody knows and Israeli cities start being destroyed?
Right.
It's risky. It's like Putin says, this is a powder keg and it's irresponsible taking these kinds of risks. Well, this is the sort of thing you would hope the American government would have said. Instead, it's the Russians who say, look, this is a powder keg. What are you doing? This is a powder keg. And we act like, oh, well, who cares? So that is not even part of the discussion in the Congress. Nothing Kerry says or Obama says takes into account any reality.
Yeah, they truly seem insane to me.
Yeah, they're insane. It's a hubris that's really unspeakable. It's unbelievable. And so nothing that's important is being mentioned. And they pretend that, okay, it's okay to attack him because we said he used chemical weapons. Well, the fact of the matter is, even if we had conclusive proof that Assad had used chemical weapons, it's still a war crime to attack him. He would have to use something against the United States.
Mm-hmm. And I think the one bright spot in all of this is that the American people and the world have finally seen that they're being lied to and are not falling for these weapons of mass destruction lies, et cetera.
Yes, that is good. And who can predict the outcome? You know, you asked me earlier, I don't know what the people can do, but if people actually get stirred up and lose confidence in the government, all kinds of things happen. I mean, it's hard for government to keep control if no one believes it.
Well, and if 2,000 people went and sat at their senator's or congressman's office and said, you know, don't vote for this, they might have some influence if we had large numbers.
That's right. If there were large numbers, it could have an influence. But I keep wondering, who is it that sends, what kind of voters send John McCain to the Senate or Lindsey Graham? I mean, if voters are so unclued in as to elect people like that, it's kind of hard to expect much from the American people.
That's a sad case. Well, Paul Craig Roberts, we're running out of time. I want to thank you so much for all of your articles and for being on the show today. And what is your website?
It's just my name. It's just www.paulcraigroberts.org.
Well, thanks again.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay.
Thank you for your interest.
You've just been listening to a recent interview with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. To read his many articles, his website is paulcraigroberts.org. And to learn more about what's really happening in Syria, go to the website globalresearch.ca or to the TV station Russia Today, which is RT. You can also go to their website, which is rt.com. Hope to see you tonight at the showing of the film 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out at the University of Hartford in the Auerbach Auditorium in Hillier Hall at 7 p.m. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.